AM, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. If you want to know what it's like to be uninsured and desperate for even basic health care, you should see the new documentary, The Waiting Room. It takes place in Oakland's Highland Hospital, an emergency room that treats hundreds of people a day, many uninsured, some who recently lost their jobs. They're tired, they're angry, they're afraid, they're frustrated, they're grateful to be treated with basic respect, and there are so many touching moments between patients and caregivers. And it's not easy to work at Highland because you are dealing with a packed waiting room. And I'd like to play a clip. Here is Dr. Doug White, who deals with so many patients every day. This is a clip from The Waiting Room.
Unfortunately, we see a lot of patients coming in with very treatable conditions who don't have access to a regular doctor. I know that I can make someone better in the short term, but the ER is not the place to manage someone's overall health. It's going to require a heck of a lot more follow-up that I can't provide.
And that is Dr. Doug White. He appears regularly in the new documentary, The Waiting Room. It opened in theaters in Oakland, San Francisco, and San Jose on October 19th. It opens in San Rafael on October 25th. The San Francisco Chronicle's film critic Mick LaSalle writes, "The Waiting Room is human drama at its most intense and universal. This is the rare film that can change the way you think and see the world." And on today's Your Call, we are joined by Peter Nix. He is producer and director of The Waiting Room. Peter is an Emmy Award-winning documentary filmmaker who has produced projects for network, cable, and public TV, exploring topics including immigration, journalism, and technology. Hi, Peter. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, Rose. How you doing?
It's nice to have you, and congratulations. Thanks. Really amazing film. I have to say what I loved about it is there's no narration. You just let the caregivers and the patients and just the sound in the waiting room tell the story.
Yeah, we really wanted to bring the audience in an intimate way into what it's like to navigate on an average day, you know, life living without health insurance. What you just heard was a little bit of voiceover. There is a little bit of voiceover where we allow you into the minds of some of the characters, but for the most part, it's just an experience of the full range of human emotion that really manifests itself in the waiting room that we noticed right away, you know, and that full range from pain and frustration to joy and inspiration was really what struck us early in the process of researching the film and what we tried to capture in the film.
And the other thing that struck me was just the human face that you put on this, because when we have conversations about healthcare, it's so political and so partisan. Obamacare, you've got the dollars thrown around, but you rarely see the human face behind this.
Well, I think part of the reason is because the people who have the megaphone are the media pundits and the politicians and the lobbyists and the people who control that message have made it into a political argument and political debate. And meanwhile, the people who are on the front lines of the system, ostensibly that we're arguing about, don't have that voice. You know, they're not uploading videos to wherever, you know, moveon.org or the websites. They're not really tweeting. They're not, you know, part of that conversation, so to speak. And what we wanted to do is bring their voice in as unobtrusive a way as we could as filmmakers. We didn't want to necessarily make a statement as filmmakers about, you know, what the healthcare system should be or what it shouldn't be or what the problem was, what the solution was. We just wanted to really let the voices and the lives of those people unfold in as intimate, dramatic, and human way as possible.
And again, this takes place in Oakland's Highland Hospital, which is a public hospital run by the county.
Right.
And so can you just give us sort of an overview sketch of just how this hospital works compared to, say, a Kaiser?
So Highland Hospital is basically the institution of last resort for the entire community. So if you don't have access to health care through, you know, private insurance, you go to Highland. But it's also the place, it's also a trauma center for the entire East Bay. So if you're in a car accident or if you do have insurance, that's where you're going to go if you're in an accident. When the president is in town, where do you think the Secret Service pays a visit to? Highland Hospital, because that's where the president will go if he ever needs medical care. So, and that's the story. You know, the story of Highland is also the story of public hospitals all over this country. It's a very, it's at once local but also national, and that's part of the reason why we also felt that at this moment in time it was very important to shine a light on, you know, what was going on in the waiting room at Highland.
And I understand your wife works there.
Yeah, she's a speech pathologist, and I, you know, I came out of the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley, and I went through the documentary program there, and she came out at the same time in her, with her master's in speech, and her first job was at Highland, and the stories that she came home with were really what first got my antenna, you know, up about, like, wow, this could be a great place to tell a story, and this is well before, I mean, there was a battle, I guess, during the Hillary Clinton era. Around healthcare, right. But I, you know, it was nothing like what it's become. And in the late 90s, you know, I was just thinking this would be a great story about a community and a public institution. And then it takes a long time to get a documentary off the ground. So in the intervening years, the healthcare debate became so divisive and so loud and noisy, and simultaneously, the voices of the folks at Highland and by extension public hospitals around the country were really being left out of that, and so the film really became more of a, you know for me it became vital, not just from a pure storytelling perspective, but just in sort of in terms of the national interest of these communities to get these voices and stories out there.
And I understand initially this was a film about the uninsured, but then you walked into the waiting room, and it changed at that point. And just to let listeners know, what's so effective is you have the camera on the waiting room and you see people just walking in and out, and you speed it up. But it's so diverse. You've got people from all backgrounds, obviously all incomes, and they're in dialogue, and some are asleep, and some are on the ground, and some are so angry. And I mean, it's just such an amazing mixture of people.
It's really remarkable. You know, and when I pitch the film, I say it's a film, it's not a healthcare film necessarily. It's a film about the human condition, and it covers the entire range, you know, of emotion. And so there's a lot of laughter in the film. Surprisingly, when we started screening it to large audiences, I was actually surprised by that sort of collective response. And it's really the type of film that's best experienced in a theater filled with people, which is part of the reason why we're doing a theatrical release. And it just felt like it was almost like Shakespearean in a sense, like the way all these people sort of came together in surprising ways, and people sitting down next to each other that never would have sat down next to each other, and sort of us overhearing conversations and the types of conversations that we overheard and wanted to try to capture that in a film, that really set the stage and the tone for how we wanted to approach the film.
Peter Nix is producer and director of the new documentary, The Waiting Room. The documentary opened in theaters in Oakland, San Francisco, and San Jose on October 19th. It opens in San Rafael on October 25th.
And we open in Berkeley on Friday.
Oh, good. And will you be in Santa Cruz?
Not yet.
But hopefully...
We're chipping away.
Okay, good.
We're chipping away.
Good. And now I would like to welcome Melissa Stafford Jones to the show. Melissa is president and CEO of the California Association of Public Hospitals and Health Systems. Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So you saw The Waiting Room. What did you think?
Well, it's an incredibly moving film, and I was very struck by Peter's comment just a moment ago about how in some ways it's really not a film about healthcare, it's a film about the human condition. And I think that the fact that in this world of sound bites, I think we're often left with the impression that somehow, you know, the uninsured are clogging our waiting rooms, implying blame, I think, in a way. But really, I think what the film shows is that the uninsured is all of us, could be all of us, and it's just a very powerful story about people in need of care and the people who are dedicated and passionate about providing that care.
And can you talk about just the overall state of public hospitals right now and the changes you're seeing? Because what struck me is, I mean, you've got, you know, young people who went to Kaiser to get surgery, and when they were about to be operated on, they found out they don't have health insurance. So they didn't get the surgery, and then they end up at Highland. Or you have a dad who just lost his job, and his daughter has strep throat, and he's there and feeling really bad because he no longer has the money to take care of his kids. I mean, you've got just all kinds of people. And so what changes are you seeing right now in public hospitals?
So public hospital systems are really, they provide a very wide range of care. So the emergency room is a very important part of what they do in serving millions of people every day. But they also provide a lot of outpatient care, including primary care, specialty care, and Pete talked some about the very important trauma care and other community-wide services that the whole community depends on public hospital systems for. In addition to trauma, it's actually burn care is often provided at public hospital systems, and training of new physicians and other types of healthcare providers is really a central role in communities and statewide that public hospital systems play. And what I would say the changes that we are really seeing in public hospital systems right now is that they are working to make many of the elements of healthcare reform real on the ground now. So even though many parts of healthcare reform don't start until 2014, public hospital systems are working to make those changes today. And the changes that our whole healthcare system needs, I mean, as the film really illustrates, they are big systemic problems in healthcare that need to be addressed. And so public hospital systems are working on that. And a few examples would be they are actually working through a program that they've developed in partnership with the state and federal government, providing coverage to some of the uninsured in advance of 2014. So about 500,000 Californians actually have coverage now because of this program that otherwise would have had to wait until 2014. And the other thing public hospital systems are doing is they're really working on improving how they deliver care so that people can get access to the healthcare services they need.
And I'd love to hear from listeners on this because it's such an important issue. Just a couple of months ago, I believe, Mitt Romney was on 60 Minutes saying that the emergency room is the way that we can provide health care to the uninsured. And that got some attention. What did you think of that comment? And if you've ever spent time in an emergency room or at a public hospital like Highland, what was your experience like? What does this say about our healthcare system and our overall society? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you've had a chance to see the waiting room, what was your response? How did this really change the way you see healthcare and how it needs to change? What are the solutions here? 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment on our website or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Melissa Stafford Jones is president and CEO of the California Association of Public Hospitals. 6% of all California hospitals statewide are public. They serve 2.5 million Californians every year, and they're located in counties where 81% of Californians reside, delivering 10 million outpatient visits every year. And Peter Nix is producer and director of the documentary, The Waiting Room. And let's hear from Andrea in Santa Cruz. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. It's good to hear your voice. I haven't been able to listen to the show for a while, but I thought that was kind of really offensive when I heard Mitt Romney comment about, if people need, medical care, they can just go to the emergency room. Well, I've been disabled for many, many years. I'm 46 years old. And I've had, a lot of people have had bad experiences at our emergency room here at Dominican Hospital in Santa Cruz. Those people seem to be prejudiced and they discriminate. They do, because I've seen it. And when I went there, I mean, I was having a really, before I even got there, before I became homeless, the ambulance crew came into my apartment and the cops came and one of the police started laughing, saying, oh, she's probably faking it. And then I get taken to the hospital and I got put off to the side in a room for like 2 hours. I was having trouble breathing. I just couldn't function. And it seems to be this pattern here where people that go to the emergency room, at least here, I don't know about other hospitals, like if you have chronic pain or you have any kind of problem that they can't see, they dog you out. They think you're just there to get drugs because you're an addict and you're looking to get high, and they treat you really badly. And one of the last times I was there, I finally just got so fed up and got so frustrated, I just ripped the IV out of my arm, you know, blood was spurting everywhere, and I just left, you know. So I've had some really bad experiences here, and I won't go there, you know. I mean, unless I fall unconscious and somebody calls the ambulance, I won't go to the emergency room. I have a friend that wants to gather some of us together, and he wants to launch a lawsuit against the emergency room at Dominican Hospital here in Santa Cruz. I went in there, and I saw an Asian family sitting there, and they had been sitting there for 2 hours. A white gentleman came in, and they took him in before the Asian family, who had been sitting there for 2 hours, and the white gentleman got out, and this family was still sitting there.
Well,
and stuff like that.
And Andrea, a horrible story. Sorry you had that experience. Let's get a response from our guests. Peter, what would you say to Andrea?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, one of the things that happens in a public hospital like Hike Highland is this entire range of experience. And so both from the patient perspective and also from the caregiver perspective, one of the things that we noticed at Highland was a remarkable level of compassion and caregiving from the staff that actually surprised me. And also from the patient point of view, a remarkable reflection of, you know, our diverse communities of people getting up every day trying to get by. There were some people there that, and it's represented in the film, that are, you know, keep going there for drugs, you know, whether it's Vicodin or whatever. We actually didn't see a whole heck of a lot of crass behavior from the staff itself, and that was reflected in the film because it's something that I think is an untold story of the public hospitals, where a lot of the people who work at the hospital, whether it's the from the nursing staff down to the clerks to the admin staff, are actually from that community. So the nurse in our film who presides over the waiting room, CJ, she was born at Highland.
Amazing.
So people coming through that line are not just patients. They're her friends. They're her neighbors. They're her loved ones. And that's reflected in the care they give.
Yeah. And CJ, apparently when you do your screenings and she shows up, you get a standing ovation for her.
She's a rock star. I mean, truly. And it's because you know, she's amazing in the film, but it's also because she's a symbol for what we all want in our healthcare system. And to the caller's point, I mean, I think there is some frustration when you go into a hospital, you're vulnerable. You feel sometimes like you've lost your dignity. And at that moment, that's when you need empathy and compassion the most. And just small acts of listening, of taking a little bit of extra time, go a long way. And so I think, you know, all public hospitals are working to improve that.
Yeah. And Melissa, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I am sorry that Andrea had such a difficult experience in an emergency room. I can't speak to that one in particular since Dominican is not a public hospital and I don't work with them directly. But I do think two responses. One would be, as you played in the clip at the beginning, it is the case that, you know, people do go to the emergency room when they don't have other ways to access healthcare, and that is one of the major shortcomings of our healthcare system as we know it today across the board in all types of healthcare systems. And a really important part of healthcare reform is and needs to be making sure that our healthcare systems, including our public hospital systems, are providing access to primary care so that people can get their care there. Because getting primary care, particularly if you have any kind of chronic illness, the emergency room, it is not the best place for that care because you really need a full healthcare team that knows you, that's familiar with your issues and the care you need, and has a range of all the kinds of providers that you need to see in a setting that's really supportive to addressing your healthcare needs. And the emergency room, because it is such an intense place, as shown in the film, is not the best place for primary care.
Right.
So I think in some ways it's really indicative of the importance of that emphasis. And I would say the other thing is I do think that public hospital systems, as part of their mission, just the DNA of the system itself, is very committed to serving a very large diversity of patients. There's really a lot of effort to make sure that all kinds of patients are served based on what their needs are and what they bring in a very sensitive and culturally appropriate way. And I think that that's just a real central part of what public hospital systems are all about, is meeting the needs of their community.
And it was very clear. I mean, there was no judgment. And Dr. Doug White, again, did talk about this. He said, look, we're a hospital, but if our patient has nowhere to go, we're not going to push them out on the street, especially when it's cold. And so this is the reality of what they're facing. And I want to play one more clip from the waiting room. And what you'll hear in this clip is the relative of a patient with a bullet wound. This bullet has been in his body for 2 days, and he's now going numb. And he is talking to, or she is talking to CJ, the intake nurse.
The where he was shot at is starting to burn now. Right. And it's getting
number. Last name Jackson.
And he said it's, the numbness is moving.
What I'm going to do is, when one of the nurses are free, I'm going to let them know. But it just ain't no guarantee. We got so many on the same acuity. To go back, that means the same level of their sickness.
Somebody's pregnant here throwing up.
But see, you don't know the whole story. You don't know. They've been triaged. They're all the same level. So I'm going to tell them that he's getting worse. He's feeling worse. And then let it go from there.
I don't know the whole story, but I do know he got a bullet in him from that they left in him 2 days ago when he was shot. Well, and he don't feel good and he numb.
Well, like I said, I'm going to pass the word along to one of the two nurses here. Let them take a look and see what they can do, okay? Because there's just no place to put everybody. It's just not. I know, but it's just no place.
And that is a clip from the new documentary, The Waiting Room. This is the relative of a patient with a bullet wound. It's been in his body for 2 days. And she's talking to CJ, the intake nurse. And Peter, you hear this over and over again. There's no place to put everybody.
Yeah, and this is really one of the things that we wanted to try to show, was that when you come into a waiting room, we call it the promised land, you know, back in the ED where you're trying to get, you know, you're sitting out there in the waiting room and it's crowded. And it's hard to understand why you have to wait, because in your mind, you feel like, oh, wow, they must have beds. They must have doctors back. What are they doing back there? And so we wanted to show precisely what was going on, that the hospital is dealing with a remarkable challenge in trying to juggle not just people filling the waiting room. And ironically, here's a guy that got shot, right, and his wound is bothering him. But that's a relatively low acuity issue here. He's competing with people who are coming in the back door who have just been shot, who have been in a car accident, who have had a stroke, or have had a heart attack. And so the hospital has to manage, you know, both, you know, the primary care needs of an entire community and also the emergencies that come in the back door.
And when the emergencies come in the back door, Dr. Doug White says that you've got about 12 to 15 people who have to stop everything they're doing to focusing on this one trauma.
Yeah, and I don't know if people fully understand, but in a lot of these communities where public hospitals are, you know, violence is a major problem. Violence is also a public health issue. And sometimes it's not just one person who shot, it's multiple, and when that happens, it sucks all the resources, you know, from the surgeons to the attending physicians to the residents, the nurses, the volunteers, all the support staff floods into the trauma bay to handle that one patient.
Yeah, and at one time they actually had three patients come in who were shot at the same time,
and that's not unusual.
We're speaking today about the new documentary, The Waiting Room, which takes place in Oakland's Highland Hospital, an emergency room that treats hundreds of people a day, many uninsured, many newly employed. If you have a public hospital story, we'd love to hear from you. And what does this say about our society? It's your call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW San Francisco, a show that relies on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's program. That's also where you can sign up for the show's weekly email newsletter. Just click the email newsletter link on the right side of the page at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about school lunches. Are they getting healthier? 31 million children participate in the National School Lunch Program, and advocates across the country are working to get healthier food in the cafeteria. But once schools actually serve healthy food, how do they get kids to eat it? That's tomorrow, and then Friday, it's our media roundtable. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us today to talk about our healthcare system, specifically public hospitals, often the last resort for people who are poor, people who don't have health insurance, people who don't really know how to navigate the system because it is so confusing. A lot of people who just lost their jobs, who no longer have health insurance, are now finding themselves in public hospitals. If you've been to Highland and Oakland or any other public hospital, we'd love to hear from you. We have full lines, so now would be a good time to post a comment on our website so others can see it. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're joined today by Peter Nix, producer and director of the new documentary, The Waiting Room. It's playing in theaters in Oakland, San Francisco, and San Jose. It opens in San Rafael on October 25th, and hopefully soon in Santa Cruz. We're also joined by Melissa Stafford Jones. She's president and CEO of the California Association of Public Hospitals and Health Systems. And let's hear next from Jennifer in Alameda. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good, sorry. I went into Highland in March. I had a surprise seizure, a grand mal seizure that lasted 11 minutes at a grocery store, and I fell on a case of wine and pretty much cracked the back of my skull and had a small bleed on my brain. I was picked up and taken to the local hospital, and once they got me stable, they stapled the wounds in the back of my head and then discharged me with no plan. I have no family that was close. I have two small children. I'm a single mom. And literally just discharged me. Later on that evening, a friend came over and I was unresponsive and had to be taken to Highland by ambulance. When I got to Highland, I had my two small children, and they were scared. They're 8 and they're 12. And so the doctors at Highland were really them and explain to them what was going on, you know, why I had to have an MRI, why I had to get a spinal tap, what was going to happen. And then they helped me get insurance and just did it for me, just took care of it for me, and also took care of the children and had them, help them find, get my phone, take the numbers of friends to get them somewhere so they wouldn't have to be with me in the hospital that night. And I definitely say that, all the follow-up care I've had from Highland has been wonderful. They see, like, not only me as a single mom who doesn't have health insurance, but they see me as a whole person. Mm. And I would say if I'm ever a rich lady that all of my money will go to Highland because they took care of me in a time where I was unable to take care of myself or my children.
Wow, incredible story. And we heard so many like this, or at least I'm thinking the outcome of many of these stories would be similar, Peter.
Well, it's interesting. We hear this over and over again, the universality of this. And, the previous caller who described ripping the catheter out,
right.
We actually have a scene in our film that's almost identical to that. This guy's so frustrated, he wants to remove the tube for his dialysis. He said, he'd rather die
right.
than have to deal with this sort of hassle. And this caller right here, we actually have a scene that didn't make it into the film. We have so much stuff that actually didn't make it into the film. It's wonderful. And it was a mom, and she's a single mom, and she came to Highland and she with her daughter because she had nowhere to take her daughter. And Doug White, who's in the film, just took care of her. And they adopted this little girl back in the emergency department, and the nurses and the paramedics and Doug and all the staff there just kind of kept her entertained. And it turned out that it was her mom's birthday, And so they helped her make a card for her mom. And her mom was, she was about to go into a surgery, and she was very worried. And so it was just remarkable, that sense of community, that sense of sort of coming together around each other to help in whatever way is needed. Sort of there's no playbook for this thing. You have to improvise and you have to do the best you can. But what we witnessed was really remarkable caregiving that sort of went beyond sort of the typical thing that you might expect.
When I watched the film, I just couldn't help but wonder, did you talk to the staff about the healthcare, what's happening with healthcare in this country?
Sure, sure. I mean, we've had many, many conversations. I mean, we early on in the film, when we weren't sure how we were going to make the film, whether the film was going to have narration or give sort of deeper context or try to dig into some of these questions, try to provide the audience with answers. We did. We talked to from the executive staff down to the nurses. And, you know, for me, the more I learned about it, it was almost like the less I knew.
Hmm.
But we did try to understand from their point of view how they felt about, you know, the Affordable Care Act, how they felt about sort of the general state of public medicine in general. And the takeaway, I think, across the board was that, you know, the challenges were deep and were not necessarily going to be solved just by the Affordable Care Act alone, that there were deeper sort of systemic issues that needed to be addressed and would be very real for years to come.
Right. Well, Melissa, you rarely hear from healthcare providers. I mean, we've had a number of single-payer doctors on our show over the years. But what would you add to that? I mean, these are the people who work in the trenches. They know what changes need to be made.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the caller story in the film shows so beautifully is just the incredible dedication, the passion, the creativity, the humanity of the staff in public hospital systems, and really their drive to serve their community right there, you know, every day, day in and day out. And there have actually been various studies of the healthcare workforce that often find that if somebody works in a public hospital system for the first few years and then they stay, they really do stay for a lot of their career because they're not there just because of the sort of technical aspects of providing health care, because they're a doctor or a nurse, whatever skills there are. They're there because of the patients and because of the mission and this deep, deep commitment to serve everyone. And I think that's what we see. And although we obviously have tremendous challenges in our healthcare system healthcare reform is such an important part of that, and really implementing it in a way that is meaningful, and we need to expand coverage and change how we deliver care. There's so many important things we need to be working on. Yet, what we can't lose sight of is that it is these human interactions between caregivers and patients that are and need to be at the center of all those efforts to improve the healthcare system. We cannot lose sight that this is sort of human being to human being taking care of each other, and that has to be right at the center. And I think that's the commitment and purpose and what's behind the work of public hospital systems and the people who work there.
And one thing I'd add to that is that we observed that I felt was quite profound was that public hospitals, at least Highland, is very uniquely qualified to provide that sort of cultural care to a community. So you've got people who are speaking multiple languages, who come from different cultural backgrounds, that the hospital has a cultural competency that just can't be replicated. And so if all of a sudden you had people, this entire community had Kaiser, for instance, or could go to any doctor that they wanted to, you'd probably find that a lot of people in that community would prefer to go to Highland. You know, despite all the challenges that Highland and other public hospitals face, there is a deep connection between these communities because of that cultural competency and that piece of healthcare, which is really a very important piece. Understanding that person's story when you sit down with them, because you may not have a long time. You know, it's that idea that when the spirit catches you, you fall down. That's a very important piece of it.
And to your point, let's play another clip from The Waiting Room, because Dr. Doug White says, yes, this is about healthcare, but this is also about all of the social problems that we're currently facing.
So this is our gentleman that came in, found down. Apparently he doesn't take his medicines that would help him stay out of the hospital. He comes in. I mean, I'm just looking back. He's come in a dozen times this year. Sorry, August, July, June, June, May, 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 March, March, February, February, February. Alcohol level is positive, as well as amphetamines and cocaine.
That'll do it.
So he got the million-dollar workup for a rough night out. He's basically been denied by his Pastor Boswell board and care. I've admitted him for increased work of breathing, but it's actually more of a social admission.
Nice. Good job.
Big deep breaths to your mouth, okay? We never know the right answer on this one. There are times I have to admit people to the hospital, keep them overnight, just as much for their social conditions as for their medical ones. It's not ideal, but we're a public hospital. We're the safety net in society. We're an institution of last resort for so many people.
And that is Dr. Doug White talking about a man who came in and now has nowhere to go because the treatment center he was in is no longer accepting him. They got frustrated because he was on cocaine and meth again. And Dr. White was saying that this is about so much more than healthcare. This is about the social issues that we're facing in so many communities. And this is a clip from the new documentary, The Waiting Room, playing now in Oakland, San Francisco, San Jose, opens in San Rafael on October 25th, hopefully in Santa Cruz soon. Peter Nix is producer and director of The Waiting Room. Melissa Stafford Jones is president and CEO of the California Association of Public Hospitals. Peter, this really does say a lot about what we're facing right now as a society. And well, what did that part of it, of being in the room, for how many days, how long did this take you?
Well, we filmed over months in the hospital, well, years really. I mean, this thing's been in the work since 2007, and there's a sort of storytelling component that actually preceded the film where we just went in and sat down with people in the waiting room, and our question was, what are you waiting for? It wasn't, you know, what do you think about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare? What do you think about the hospital? And we found that people just wanted to express themselves. They wanted to grab hold of a little bit of their dignity and share with people who they were, you know, and we organized all these moments by theme and emotion. And that really set the tone for the film and really deciding to let the film be a cinema verite, observational film. And, you know, we really felt that, you know, part of what I saw was what I think is a bit of an empathy problem in our country. And I think this was summed up. We were at a recent screening at the Kabuki, and we had our merch table set out there, and people were walking by, and I just sort of described what the film's about. So it's about Highland Hospital, which is right over the Bay Bridge. And one guy stopped and said, oh, this is a film about the people who go use the services at the hospital and then leave the taxpayers the bill. And he just sort of very short and then just sort of walked away. Mm. And I, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, wow, you know, so then what do we do with someone who, you know, gets sick or a drug addict who needs help, like this guy in that scene? Do we just throw them out on the street? Is that the solution? And so that's a very real, you know, you talk about sort of this political conversation that's going on. There is this idea that the uninsured are somehow, you know, sick offense, or they're taking advantage of the system, that they're irresponsible. And we wanted to try to, you know, not necessarily engage that debate directly, but to show who these people were, that in that film you can see yourself, you've lost your job, you could see your neighbor, your friend, your loved one, and begin the conversation there.
Yeah, and it's a question we really have to answer, because almost all of these people are dealing with these social issues and problems.
Yes, and if we didn't care, you know, we're all vulnerable. I mean, we're all on this journey together, the journey of life. And life's unpredictable, and with not just health, but with the economy, you can lose your job.
Yeah,
you get sick.
So many of the people just lost their jobs in this film.
Right.
Well, we've got full lines, so I want to try to take as many calls as we can. We've got about 15 minutes or so left. Thanks for waiting patiently. Let's go to Suzanne in Hillsburg. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I love your show, and I'll just be quick here. My brother had a stroke last year, and the emergency room in Modesto, I have to say, did save his life. But after the fact, when he needed to get out, nobody would take him because he did not have great health insurance. We ended up by, I don't know what, the universe. He ended up in a great hospital in Roseville for a few weeks, and then they realized that he did not have great health care. They literally kicked him out. As bad as he was. I mean, thank God he's doing better and better little by little every day, but still doesn't have really health care, doesn't have therapy, nothing.
And can you talk a little bit, when you say that the hospital wouldn't take him, what was that process like? Did you call different hospitals?
Oh, every hospital in the Bay Area, from Stanford to Walnut Creek to UCSF. He didn't have health care. They didn't take him.
Right. So they asked you, does he have health care?
And that was number one.
And it sounds like, were you advocating for him? Can you talk about that also?
Because unbelievable. It was a whole nightmare. And, I mean, you just don't know where to turn. You have nowhere to go. You literally called seven on your side. They couldn't help you. Nobody could help you. As long as you don't have a major health care plan, Blue Shield, Blue Cross, you're not going to get anywhere on this planet as far as your care after something happens to you.
Oh, well, thank you for calling in, Suzanne. And it just brings up this question about how you'd really need an advocate to make these phone calls and who... I mean, would you address that, Melissa? Someone like Suzanne's friend who could not get, or brother, who could not get any health care, or who couldn't get a bed because he didn't have health care.
Yes, I mean, I think that, unfortunately, this is not an uncommon situation. And it is why starting off with expanding coverage is just one of the key things we simply have to do in our country, and that reform goes a long way to doing that, although unfortunately there will still be a number of people who will remain uninsured. But we have to not leave people uninsured. We have to work on getting them coverage, and I think we're on that road, but we still have a lot of work to do to make that happen. And then the thing is, even having a coverage card is not always enough to get access to the care that you need. And so we have to keep working in our healthcare system to make sure that then people do get access to the care they need. And you mentioned earlier, Rose, that public hospital systems make up about 6% of hospitals in the state, and that is correct. They also provide close to half of all the hospital care to the uninsured. So you can see that a relatively small number of healthcare systems around the state actually provide huge amounts of care to the uninsured. And so we have got to both reduce the number of uninsured, but then we have to make sure that people really do get access to the care they need. And this is where public hospitals, by mission, absolutely are committed to serving all people, including people who do not have coverage.
So if Suzanne's brother had shown up to a public hospital, he would have been admitted without health insurance?
If he needed inpatient care, he would have gotten that care.
And that was actually a scene in the film where the guy had a stroke and he was released from the private hospital and without medications and ended up at Highland. And then the young couple, the guy with the testicular tumor, he actually went to Kaiser with a credit card, and he called around to the HMOs. He couldn't get into any of the HMOs. They wouldn't take him. Kaiser took him. So Kaiser did a good thing by taking him, and the initial tests went, you know, he put them on the credit card, but when they discovered he had a tumor that needed to be removed, that's a tens of thousands of dollars surgery. You can't put that on a credit card. And that's the point where he was released, you know, from Kaiser. He didn't get kicked out of Kaiser. It was just, you know, Kaiser told him, you know, you can't put this on your credit card. And so then he finds himself at Highland.
And did he get the surgery?
He did at Highland. He got about 6 weeks later, and the tumor was benign, and they're now married and living in Hawaii.
Wow. And does he have huge medical bills?
He still owes Kaiser that.
From the tests.
Yes, yes.
That's the other problem, is we've got so many medical bankruptcies because of this. Well, thank you again for calling, Suzanne. Let's hear next from David in Berkeley. Hi, David.
Hi. Peter, I wanted to say thank you for your terrific coverage of the best county hospital available.
Thank you.
It is also one of the points, though, I'd like to bring up is that you didn't go in there with an agenda, and that was terrific. It brought all the an unbiased view for people who are still sitting on the fence. Mm-hmm. They need to see the film, and you need to do more promoting. Be less humble in your as you were humble in your approach of showing in the film these strong characters and the you know, the multifaceted people that go through the system. But promote your film. It's got to be seen quicker before many people who are still fence-sitting, so they understand single-payer hospitalization.
Yeah, you know, we've tried. That requires
How are you going to promote it? Because I'd love to, you know, send you a contribution, because I understood just to get your film on, you had to spend $75,000.
Yeah, we had to do a Kickstarter. It's incredibly expensive to promote.
Yeah.
You know, Iron Man 3, you think, okay, Robert Downey Jr. cost $150 million to make. You know, sell itself, right? Well, they spend about $150 million to put people in the seats for a film like that.
Wow.
And it is remarkably expensive. We opened in New York and L.A. The crowds were kind of light. We've had terrific reviews. You know, we're 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Everybody loves the film.
Mm-hmm.
The Bay Area release has been phenomenal, but it's because it's been percolating here for several years. People know about it. Everybody who sees the film is moved and loves it, but it costs a lot of money to raise, you know, to get people in Chicago, Boston, D.C., L.A. knowing about the film. And we've been trying as hard as we can. We raised the 75 through 100, 800 backers on Kickstarter.
Wow.
But, you know, you can come to our website, and we have a Get Involved section. And if you'd like to, you know, make a donation to our nonprofit, you can certainly do that. And we're working in the next several weeks to raise the awareness. And the award season is coming up. We just got nominated for a Gotham in New York City, which is a Academy Award precursor. So we're starting to have impact. And slowly but surely, I don't know if it's going to be before the election that everybody will know about the film, but we are raising the awareness.
Yeah. Well, so do your social media publicizing. Thank you for the call. Let's hear next from Jamie in Stinson Beach. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Rose. I'm the director of the Homer Documentary Film Festival in Homer, Alaska, and we show the 9 best documentaries of the year. And we showed A Waiting Room, and Peter won the award for the best director against some pretty stiff competition, and we just closed. So, Peter, the certificate's coming at you.
Oh,
and
wow, thanks.
Second.
This is the first I've heard about this.
So it was second for the Audience Award against some very, very excellent films. And I just wanted to say that the reason that I like this film and what I said to the audience as part of the introduction is that I think this is the foundational document for the debate about healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And as earlier folks have said, one of the great things about this movie is it takes no position. It's not as if it has an agenda and it says when it's all over, here's what we ought to do about the Affordable Care Act or otherwise. It just says, this is the way it is. 274 patients in the course of a day coming into this hospital. Here are the conditions that they suffer. Here's the backgrounds that they have. And here's what we do about it. Now, let's address this and see if we can't solve the question of health care in the United States. It's a remarkable movie, and I urge everyone to see it. People in Homer just loved it, and it's a testament to the great documentary program at Cal, if I might say so.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jamie. And let's go next to Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann.
Oh, hi there. Thank you very much for doing this. I have not seen the show. I have a couple questions. I mean, the movie. A couple questions for the guests would be, is I have had experience at Summit Hospital. Is that, I have not been to Highland. Is that a comparable hospital? Is that a...
Where is Summit?
Summit's in Oakland.
Do you know, Melissa?
It's not a public hospital, if that's the question.
Yes.
Okay, well, then the ancillary question to that would be a question of what one does when he or she has unusual extenuating medical circumstances, not like I don't want to downplay someone having a heart attack or a stroke, which is what they know how to deal with. But if you have complicated medical situations and you call a doctor off hours, the only response he or she is able to give you is go to the ER. And I'm wondering if there are other options. And then what does one do when they get to the ER and they don't have a clue how to deal with your complications?
Mm-hmm. Melissa, do you want to take that?
Sure. Well,
I think the caller is raising a very important point, which is that if we don't want people to go to the emergency rooms for things that aren't true emergencies, then we have to provide them with access to the care that they do need more than just, you know, 9 to 5, because as we know, the reality is that sometimes we have jobs and we can't get to an appointment during that time, or just things come up, you know, before typical or after typical hours. And so one of the things certainly that public hospital systems around the state are working on is how to really expand access to primary care, to care they provide in their clinics, to both a lot of evening hours and even Saturday clinics, and even in some cases Sunday clinics, because we do need to provide people with a place to go to get their health care needs met when it's not an emergency, but when it does need to be dealt with. And sometimes that's an urgent care center, but it can be even better often, particularly I think in what the caller's raising here, when a person has complex medical needs or maybe extenuating circumstances, if they can really see the healthcare team that's their team and knows them.
Right.
That would be ideal. And so I do think there's a real focus in public hospital systems on taking steps to try to address the issue that caller's raising. And it's an important one.
It is. And we've done a show about just sort of access. Where do you go? And it sounds like we should do another one in the near future. Peter, final thoughts from you. 30 seconds.
Wow. Well, I mean, I think it really goes back to the previous caller, which is like, okay, you've made this a political film. Like, how do we make an impact? And the way that we can make an impact is simply, you know, going to see this film, I think, is the first step. Having a conversation with somebody about healthcare and using this film as a conversation starter.
I'd love the guy that you met at Kabuki to see this film.
He should see it.
Peter Nix is producer and director of the new documentary, The Waiting Room, playing now in Oakland, San Francisco, and San Jose. It opens in San Rafael on October 25th, and hopefully it'll be in Santa Cruz soon. Melissa Stafford-Jones is president and CEO of the California Association of Public Hospitals and Health Systems. Peter and Melissa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rose.
And thank you for your phone calls and emails. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. Are school lunches getting healthier? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about what kids are eating in school. With 31 million children participating in the National School Lunch Program, advocates across the country are working to get healthier food in the cafeteria. And many innovative school garden and lunch programs originated in Northern California. So what makes a healthy school lunch program? And once schools serve healthy food, how do they get kids to actually eat it? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.